balance Yuhu, I felt that the Dreamcatcher approach to releasing knowledge, hidden knowledge, was so impressive for me, was such a joy that I felt Yuhu could benefit of it in its own findings and ways to come to a new way to circulate experiences and knowledge. Because we are used, particularly in larger groups, to certain structured ways which are suppressing very often lots of hidden or inner or not even known knowledge in oneself. And as the, but this is more than I know to explain, but actually that was my impulse, and I mentioned it several times in the EU realm, and so it came about that it's here now. And I'm happy that mutually one can learn from each other, that things are spreading, and hopefully one day more and more into our working, institutional working groups.
So what we can do is divide it into two parts. One, I'm just going to give you a basic background on the conference that just started. What is the kind of process that you're following? And some of the examples that you tried to manifest, and then David will follow up with the one example in particular, which is the crown race. Also, I want to just say from the beginning, all we'll be presenting here is a group or a larger forum work of 2.5 years. And we all very much a part of it. It's not one single person who's put this together. So about 2.5 years ago, a few of us felt that it's time to dissolve or try to merge these different opinions in our opinion, mainly because it was five architects who started it, so it was mainly about the galaxy. And how can we, you know, this anti-galaxy and pro-galaxy standpoints, how is it possible to really merge this, merge the vision with the reality? And from there it took on, they started working together and they realized that there is a potential in this. And it was actually a journey into something unknown. We really didn't know when we started where we're going. And even today, one of the things of the Dreamcatcher is that we really don't have any agenda. We don't have a fixed agenda. We don't have a goal that we have to reach there. And that's given us a lot of scope and flexibility and openness and dynamism. And it's been a great experience for all of us who've been part of it. And it's also been very joyous, which I think is one of the few forums where I've been participating for 2.5 years and I still enjoy doing it. So what we're going to just start off with is a little bit of the history and how it is going right now also. Maybe we can start probably. Okay, Bonnie, I just want to, yeah. Also, I wanted to say that because we were into planning, we were thinking of something that we could support the existing groups in our, we were not trying to say that we're going to replace the planning group or any kind of group. We were just saying how can we enrich that process in Oracle and support this visioning from a different angle. So that was one of the things. And another thing was that a lot of people felt that everybody, after a while in groups, you tend to get burnt out and you're kind of forced to be there every meeting, every week, and it's quite a tiring process. And it's not also every topic that comes on the table is not everybody's cup of tea. So we wanted to keep it very flexible. And we realized that this is the only way we feel that we can go on for a longer time. So that was one of the ideas that we started. Okay. So it's an open source planning approach. One of the main things is to stimulate dialogue within the community and, you know, what is the possible built environment. But now we feel that it's not just the built environment that we're talking about. We're talking about different levels of communication. Next. Merging the cloud reality with the Galaxy Master Plan. This is very important, synthesizing seemingly opposite viewpoints. And we were trying to see if we can not just an intellectual synthesis, but one which would allow all sorts of inspirations and aspirations to be an integral part of it, which grows organically and gradually with a growing collective intelligence. And this is something which takes a lot of time and patience, and this is one thing we have to, we have realized that after 2 years we have realized that it takes a long time to come to this kind of organic process, but then it's really a collective process. And it's something that is enriching every individual who is part of it. It's helping us to make individual creative leaps which wouldn't have been possible if we had not been part of this larger forum. And this is something that's really interesting. Next. And we have no fixed agenda, and we're not orienting ourselves to any fixed end result. So we started like this. In the meantime, we have something called the next, something called the Green Patches Charter, which is, means that it's open to all as people from any nationality, any background, anybody, any guest, any newcomer, anybody who wants to come for one session, for as many sessions, it's open. The only condition is that we are meeting at 6 to 8 in the morning. Check the potential wisdom, opening up communication, unblocking latent energies, and aspiring to the highest within us, where something new may emerge. This is very important. We feel that we don't have any copyrights on whatever we do. Everything is, we call, copyleft. Whatever we create, whatever we generate in terms of ideas. We have an emailing list of about 50, 60 people, and everything, whatever is generated in the sessions, are put into what we call now pearls, right? Now bullets. And these pearls are sent to everybody. Okay, next. We'll hear more of this later on. Yeah, raise the level of internal dialogue. And this, for me personally, I've really, really benefited. Space. It's not a result-oriented collective space. And this also, we don't demand any input from anybody. It's not that you have to come or you have to say something. You can come and say nothing. You can just be part. Because we believe that inspiration flows at its own pace, and we cannot really force it. And it also means that we're not forcing any kind of topic, any agenda, because we feel, okay, if there is an energy, it will come, it will manifest. And we have experienced this. Each one of us, once, you know, we feel driven with some topic. Like Peter, you know, he feels very much for the organization. That's his theme at the moment. He goes for it and he takes it forward. And each one of us at different times, you will see, have taken over. We become the sort of engines, but we have in our rucksack the dream catchers. It's not a forum for to be against anything. It's a forum to be for openness, for spontaneity, which is very important. We feel whatever we do, we must enjoy doing it. So it's important. So we started like this, 6 to 8 in the morning. It came about very organically. We didn't, actually we were thinking where to meet. First we started meeting in town hall. David made the effort of going and meeting all the architects personally, and you know, trying to say, would you be interested in this? And are there any things that you would have against it, or would you like to add something? And it was a great, it was a good way, because first in the beginning we thought we were going to work on the planning and we need to involve all the architects. And we were meeting at the town hall, and a lot of people felt, no, this is not the place, what time, when, and it's been some work on, and somebody just said, why not 6 in the morning? It was like a joke. And you know, we took it up, and it actually transformed the whole thing into something different completely. Because, and like this, we've explored so much of Auroville. It's a time when you can go to places where actually would not be available to you, a lot of places, the terraces. You get a whole different perspective being above. And like this, we've been able to involve different people at different times, because for one session, if we're going to have it in one place, we can always, we go individually and talk to them, one of us, and says we want to have drink at, and they say, oh, what is dream catchers? And then we explain what we're doing. could you come to the session, and then they come to one session, and so like this we've been able to get the input of a lot of people into the dream catchers, and it's kind of, it's really enriched the whole process a lot. And 6 to 8 is a time which is very, it's just a different energy, and that really taps a lot. Hello? Okay, so this is one of the places where we managed to get in the morning in Kabulamat in Mandir. There are many sessions in different places. I've just taken a few photos next. Okay. American Pavilion. And always at different sessions, different people will turn up. We have a very small, we have a kind of way where we start with a chant, which is a collective chant for whenever you start something collective from the Vedas. And then we have this, we have a set, the way we work is first we have a check-in round with the talking ball, so everybody can say any whatever has come to them. We have a, after the chanting, we have a small meditation so that everybody can center themselves. And then in the check-in round, it's like if anybody has anything received in this one round of 5 to 10 minutes of meditation, or if there's something that happened in the last week that you would like to share, or some ideas. And then after the check-in round, we have this ball where whoever wants to talk can take the ball and talk. So it's very calm, very meditative. It's not an arguing or a discussion, or it's not shooting down each one's ideas or anything. It's basically just very respectful listening and trying to create that safe space. So something new, which none of us actually imagined, can emerge, and it's very often happened. It's really something you've experienced. And at the end, we have again a checkout round, which just sums up, or if people want to say if they want to change something. And then at the end of every session, David is kind of collecting all the bullets. Right now, Peter's been doing for the last few sessions, so we keep on rotating. But in the end, we kind of create a whole collected material of all the ideas that we have, that have come up and generated, and eventually we present it to the community. It'll come the process next. This is an Annapurna, for example. I mean, there's so many people who would have been to Annapurna, and going there at 6 in the morning, it's really an amazing experience to go to all these places, and it puts you in contact with the is when we were doing the green, we called it the green dream space, and we were exploring all the green communities in Oroville, the green belt communities, and one of the places was okay, so we simply began with the aim of creating a space to call down our dreams, and very soon some of us felt that we want to bring this down more into matter. You know, we're itching to have do something more. So next, dream weaving kind of emerged from that, which is basically weaving a tapestry of all the ideas. And this was interesting because we started meeting in the evenings. We felt in the morning the time was not enough, and it also needed a different kind of energy because we're actually working with papers and pens and whatever materials you want to get. And we're exploring different modalities of working together. So it was like every session could be choreographed by a person, whoever had an interest in that topic. And this is how we actually started seeing how we can work together, even trying to get our practically manifesting something together, which was very, again, a different way of looking at it. And this dream weaving ultimately led to the dream in space, which is installations. We just did some land installations. And there, this is seeking the highest common factor as opposed to the lowest common denominator. This is what happens typically when you work in teams and groups. It becomes very difficult to come to a consensus, and then in the end, you very often go for the lowest common denominator because you don't want to create disharmony. And what dream catchers have shown us that you can work together, and you can still go beyond each one's individual potential and create something higher than that. And we've actually felt, we've actually experienced this, and this has been a great enrichment for us as a process in our work. Next. So these are some of the sessions when we work together. It was, I have to say, we're not just architects. We started with architects, but there are lots of people who are, and we actually encourage people who are not architects to be part of the thing, because we feel that it really enriches. We do tend to become in boxes with our profession. So it's been very interesting at that level as well. And it began to be there was a lot of sharing, there was a lot of communication, which generally doesn't happen. Started sharing our other projects, sharing books or ideas, and it kind of started flowing in a way that we hadn't imagined. Each one was taking something back into our own professions, into our own work, and whatever it was, whether it is, you know, graphic design or it's organization in Porto's or it's doing some project in Auroville, each one of us felt that with this dream catcher process, it gave us a kind of support, it gave us a kind of platform, which was very beautiful, and gave us the strength to do that. Next. So these are some of the. These are some of the kind of themes that we have acquired. You know, all the different areas, like sensorium, Auroville-ianizing Auroville, and we have something called Temple for Living in at the bottom. And these are some, the entrance and the green belt are two which I'm going to show you, because that's what we have manifested in terms of dream space. But all the others, we have like a whole bunch of ideas which are it's really interesting the kind of ideas that come up, and we have that, and in future we plan to do dream spaces on that as well. So when we started the first dream space, we had this kind of little mirrors, which were on the back, it was written, who's responsible for the future of Auroville? And then you turn over and you see yourself. And that's, we put it in all the community kitchens and all the communities. And it was a great success, because everybody was like, because we wanted to say, come on, we are going to create Auroville, and all of us are responsible for it. And all of us have to, not have to, but can give our best, or try to give our best. And we wanted to be a very interactive land installation where we invited the community and really tried to make it happen. Next. So these are the two dream spaces, the entrance dream space and the green dream space, which was, one was on the entrances to Auroville and the green belt of Auroville, and it happened in April and August 2006. With a very low budget of 30,000 rupees, we managed to get some money from somewhere here and there. Next. And we're very lucky to have Leonard with us, and Leonard and Marie, who are doing a lot of graphic design for us. So they have been very instrumental in creating a lot of good ideas for us. Next. So we studied all the different entrances to Auroville. And we would have also dream catching sessions in the morning, 6 to 8 in the morning, at different locations in Auroville where you enter. Next. So you go quickly through these things. These are just the different various ways one enters Auroville. And our aim was, our question was like, how does one enter a city like Auroville? And how can we change? How can we transform a person who's coming from outside? How can we make it inviting, at the same time say that you're entering a different space? How do we create that without saying it, without just creating it? So we selected a spot which was the Bunyan. There was a Bunyan on this triangular plot of land next to Certitude, which had a long history of some of the old timers may know. Which was a kind of a spot where there had been some disarmament. We thought it's great. So a lot of us didn't know about it, but basically when we did do it, I think it was a kind of healing process as well at the same time. And we made this Bunyan as the center of our dream space. And we created three circles. And one was where we had a lot of activities happening, one was where we exhibited what we had caught, all the dreams, and we wanted people to come and actually not just passively take what you're giving, but actually also start themselves the process of what they would like to see as an entrance. And we're trying to tease out those parameters, what people felt. Next. And these are the kind of sheets that we had. Each one we had about 15, 20 of these ideas. International residential transfer, of how does it happen, talk to us. Plenty of ideas, next. So this, you'll just get an idea of the kind of space that had been created. Again, there were mirrors on the back side and in the front side, and each one with the idea, each one had sheets where people could write, and they were all hung at the bottom so people could see what has been collated till now. There were maps, there were lots of discussions, and lots of people who visited. Next. But what I also want to say is that on this dream space, about 11 of us worked together, and this was all a mixture, about 7 architects and other 4 people, and it was amazing. The process that we went through to come to this space was in itself already a great learning experience, just to see how to make it harmonious, all our vision that we wanted, and to manifest something with that. And something that carried that spirit still. I think we succeeded to a certain extent. It wasn't 100% successful, but I think we learned a lot through that. And lots of schools were invited, and things that the children could do, and how they visualized from their perspective. In a different way, of course, they don't philosophize it. And we had lots of interesting people coming and giving us their ideas. Next. And what we have done is now we have collated all this, we have put them all together, and we have actually created what we call now dream boxes, which means all the information that was there, including the maps and the ideas and all the feedback, they have been put in a box, and in a kind of a box which invites people to work further on it, and we have put it in all the school libraries and in 2 major libraries in Oroville, the one in Bharat Niwas and here in Town Hall, so that if anybody wants to work,
we will put them in the software.
But there is one sample you will see, we have got one here. It's just been finished. We got a small grant from Stichting Desire for this. Next. And I wanted to, this is one of the examples, what happened after the entrance dream space, how things started taking their own, the ball started rolling, and it's kind of, Nicole approached us, this was one of the ideas that we had, how do you make an entrance to Oroville, and let's have it outside, how do you get people from outside into inside, instead of having them all parking at the visitor center, doing their shopping and going back and seeing a little bit of Matsu Mandir, and that's their impression of Oroville. And we thought there can be more to it than that. And so we had this idea of doing it on the outskirts near Irumbai. And Nicole saw it from the visitor center, and she was very interested. She asked us to work further on it. So we worked. Next. And Mari, who is a landscape architect or designer, she started working further on this. We did a lot of walks here along the Irumbai Lake, and we tried to locate the areas, the land, the views, the ideas, and we made 3 proposals. One is like the long-term vision, you know, how we can park at the Irumbai Lake and go slowly over and to the visitor center and from there to Matsu Mandir. And it's surprisingly, it's like from the Irumbai Lake to the visitor center is as far as visitor center to Matsu Mandir, so in terms of the walk. So it's not that it's impossible to do it, and it could be quite beautiful. We have a lot of ideas. Everything, of course, trying to be as ecological and trying to see where we put it next. And this was another next. This was like the medium-term vision. So if that's not possible right now, this could be possible. For example, we would have an educational park, and we could take up. This is the road that comes from Indian Chandi, the black. And we could use that and go over the canyon from our dam, and the white on the top, you see the visitor center and how we could use that. And really also still slow down the people and give them a different way of looking at our village, and not just shopping, but also more than that. Okay, next. Yeah, these are some sketches that Mike did. This is Proposal 8. This is one which is going to be implemented now. This is like the real short-term vision that we can do immediately. Next. And this is what is actually being done. The green, the new plantation has been done with David and Oradam and with Nicole, and they're actually trying to, at some point, so people will then actually enter from the canyon and go to the new building on the right, which will be the reception. If you don't have to have all the people and the buses coming in. And there are lots of factors, of course, when you start planning and going into detail. But what I want to just show with this is that there have been people who have taken further ideas that have been generated in the dream catchers and are actually manifesting it, still with that same spirit. It's not a closed thing. It's not my design. It's not your thing. And it's still very much open. And great. I mean, we all connected this. This is the beauty. It's not, I feel this is dream catchers. It's not Marie or me or David or Peter or me. And this is something very recent that happened. I just had to put it in. These are some comments of Architect Vivi Doshi in a recent meeting we just had with him. And I'm sorry, I have to read a bit, but it's like his comment was that we're trying to build a town that is not conventional, it is beyond that. It will be a town that is based on a strong spiritual foundation and of citizens of higher consciousness. This is Doshi talking. This is notes of the meeting that we had with him. And those who don't know Doshi, he is a very famous architect in India. He's been several times invited by Roger and the other people in Oroville to work on the town plan of Oroville. So he was just saying, you know, how. So the town should actually facilitate this for everyone and should be planned and built in such a way that as a casual tourist guest or a newcomer, for that matter, anybody coming inside Oroville should pass through experiences that will take off his layers of ego, relieve him of his stress, calm him down, and by the time he reaches the Matri Mandir through different areas and zones, he should already be in a meditative state of mind. He said it's not at all an easy task even for someone like him who has designed and built buildings and townships with various scales for about 6 decades, and it's a very challenging task, and he offered to work with us on this. He said this would be the most interesting and challenging project of his life. The whole concept is quite intriguing, and if we can achieve this through the planning, it would be really something to imagine a speeding motorcyclist and other drivers slowing down on their own as they pass through the green belt, enter the inside of the town without physically being forced to do so, and may not even drive as they come inside. The entering experience slows them down, makes them leave the vehicle. And this I found very amazing because this is what we had been talking 1.5 years ago on the entrance dream space. And this is what I mean about, I mean, I think subtly there is so much connection, there is so much weight, and this is what I feel is a strength. I mean, I'm not saying it's only dream catchers, it happens everywhere in Oroville, but I had to give this as an example because this happened in Feb now, and when he was talking, and it completely for me struck me to see him talking the same words, the same echoes, the same spirit. So it seems as if something wants to manifest. Let's see. Next. This is the next dream space, which was the green space. There again, the idea was like we tried to take up topics which we felt were kind of issues in the. Of course, a lot of issues, but we felt where we could handle it and where we could feel some energy. And we always felt the green belt and the city, so to say, there was a big divide between the green belters and the city and the visioning of the two and how they look at it. So we said, how can we bridge this differences? And so we visited all the different green communities, which was a very enriching experience because we started looking at the city in a completely different way from their perspective, how they see it, and you know, it was like, yeah, it made a lot of sense. At the same time, we saw a lot of their problems, a lot of their disillusionments, and it kind of started working something within each one of us in a different way. Next. We made lots of studies during our morning sessions. Oops, this is not such a good. But basically, we're trying to see what is the, you know, the area or the villages within the dream. Within the green belt, etc. This will make things not seem to work so well. And this is very graphic, right? You can just go press 2 times next. So this is the city area, the green, the black is what we've already bought in the city, and the black is what we've bought in the green belt. So you can see in the city we have 83% of the area, and in the green belt we have 27%. spent, like, I think for the way we looked at it, is that it was not possible to have the city without the green tech. So we felt we want to do something. How can we make the creative leap that take all the achievements in the green? I mean, they're very well known for all the green work that they've done. But how can we take that forward? How can we change it? And how can we benefit from in our planning process from that next? Which should be one line. This is just the total area of the green belt and the city. And so you see it very graphically represented what we need to buy in order to consolidate the land. So while doing this, of course, a lot of other issues came up with the village and how does one work with all the growth outside and the land issues and the pressures and everything next. So for this green dream space, we selected a place in Revelation, which is in the Green Belt, in one of the parks in the Green Belt. And we have a very nice piece of land here. We worked with Christo on this one next. And we kind of transformed that space into a land arts exhibition space where people could come next. And always the idea is to create that ambience, that atmosphere, that simplicity, that when people come, they feel encouraged and they feel supported and motivated to give something back and not just receive from us. Next. So we had again various ideas and seeds from different trees, and we kind of try to put up in a way that is appealing. And we had lots of activities happening at the same time. Johnny did a play there on the spot with the kids, and we had all the different green communities offered walks through their communities, or Charlie was showing the milking. I mean, there was lots of things happening, and a lot of people enjoyed, because even as Aurovillians, a lot of us don't go always to these different communities and explore them. So for a lot of us, it was a great chance to be with people. And this is communication. And if this is communication which opens different doors afterwards, I think. Thanks. And these are some of the kind of ideas. We had multiple green belts. So we said, why should only Oroville have a green belt? Every village should have a green belt around the time. If we could show them what green belt and what are the benefits of having a green belt. Next. And this is something called the psychography of Oroville, and this is like we want to do a psychological map of Oroville. This was one of the ideas that came up. And we asked whoever came, we had a huge map, and we asked whoever came to put on the map the areas that they would really like to see left in Oroville as they are today. It can be a building, it can be a cashew top, it can be a eucalyptus grove, it can be a canyon, anything. And it was really interesting how people responded. But again, here, of course, it was a little bit revelation, a little bit inside, and we felt that there could have been more community participation. Next. Next. So these are all materials which we can recycle. So we have, like, everything is in order, and we have a little lockbook where we keep all the materials. And this is another of the ideas that took off from Dream Catches, which is a design studio which we offer to Indian students, from architecture students, final year students, or architects, just young, fresh architects. And we introduce to them Dream Catching and co-creating cafe that you come after what it means as a tool for designing. And this is just to illustrate how it can take off in various directions and it can enrich itself further. And we did it in Verite, where they stayed, and they also lived and worked for 14 days. And we invited a lot of architects from within Oroville to come and be faculty or core faculty, give talks. And in the end, we had a final jury where Doshi had come. And that was actually when this whole process with Doshi started. Next. And we're working on the Integral Health Enhancement Center. We gave them two options. So this is a dream catching session in the morning with all the students and participants and all the architects who were there. And the question was like, what is health? And that was what we were dream catching on. And it was very interesting to see what came out from all these architects, what health means to them in terms of architecture, not just in terms of, you know. And next, and then we worked on this co-creating cafe. which is a modified version from the Conversation Cafe. It's a tool for addressing specific design problems. But it can be also used for any problem, anything. You can one co-creating cafe, for example, we did was like, not in this particular group, but one was that, what works well in Oroville and how can I do more of it? And that was one of the co-creating cafe we had, and it was amazing. You know, it was just like positive. We don't want to look at only the negative aspects. But of course, we should look also at some point. But what was interesting is what it generates in 1 hour, the kind of what you get on the table is amazing, just with this way of working. So people circulate in small groups, generating cross-fertilization of ideas. Again, you move away from the idea that this is my concept. These are tapestry of different ideas. Next. So what it does is you sit in groups of four, and this is very nice because even like as you see Helmut sitting there, Oleg sitting there, all the architects were interacting with the students, and it completely broke the ice. It completely put everybody on the same level, which was fantastic for the whole creation, generation of ideas. It doesn't happen often in Oroville, I mean in architecture, because always you have people, the professor or the person who's the student learning. So this is learning together, it's beautiful. And you, in 20 minutes, you talk about this. The question that was given was to them that how can I create a atmosphere conducive to healing as an architect. And every 20 minutes, one person would stay back and the other three would go to other three different tables. Next. And then the person who stays back just gives a very brief account of what happened in the last 20 minutes. And the other three who have gone, they have not taken anything with them, only what's remained in their memory. They don't take any paper with them. But on the table, there are lots of ideas being sketched. So within 1 hour, you have a complete tapestry of different ideas. And then you present them, each group presents, and then you see what comes around. And it's like you have so many things which are common, they're threads which you can pull, and then after this 1 hour, it's like you can go on for another 2 weeks with these ideas. Next. So this can be done for anything. It's not only for designing. Was the only first time we tried to do it for designing. Generally in America they have lots of this kind of conversation cafes where they talk about lots of other issues. And then the students, of course, at the end of it we asked them after 4 weeks, you know, the kind of feedback we got, and they said dream catching and co-creating cafe was for them. Although we did only 4 hours in the whole 2 weeks, it was the thing that made the maximum impact on them in terms of their designing. Next. And this was in the end, we had the jury and the usual. But it was a very, again, it was something which happened because the dream catchers had happened. That's what I want to say again, because it could have taken off if this had not been there in our website. Tony, myself, David, and Ganesh, and who else was there? Helmut. We were like kind of coordinating with Chamalaji. So we were all dream catchers and we brought that energy into this whole studio, and for them it was a great, great experience. Next. So this is what the process has, as it has evolved to today. And next, from dream catching to dream manifestation, it's like dreams acquired, dream weaving, dreams presented in the dream space. We have the feedback and the dream boxes, one of which we have here, and the integration, distillation, and the dream manifestation. Next. And this is, of course, the dream of dreams, which actually started this whole thing. Next. So now from here, David's going to take over. This is another one of our major dream catchers. Very much a work in progress, whatever you see. This is the crowd maze. David, you can take over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Cranways, just give a little bit of a background. About this time last year, the secretary approached Lavinia Dalrymple to say that he got some seed money to build the Crown Road. And Lavinia formed a subgroup, the Cranways subgroup, to actually discuss how to do that, what to do and how to do it. And a few of the Dreamcatchers were invited to be part of that subgroup. And we made it very clear from the very beginning that we weren't really there just to build the Crown Road. We actually, a lot of the ideas and proposals that we've been coming up with over the previous couple of years, we were interested in actually using this as an opportunity to explore what we might do with the Crown area, rather than just the Crown Road. So while the subgroup had its interactions with the secretary, we created a subgroup of the subgroup to start looking at, not using the techniques which Mona's just been describing a little bit, to actually see what else we might come up with. And to do that, we sort of went back to go forwards. Next. This is one of the original sketches from the master plan. You can already see, you can already get a sense of the four zones. Here in the center, you've got the lines of course. So you might be able to see the sort of the galaxy movement, quite turbulent, the landscape swirling around. You might notice also this is an early one where, in fact, the cultural zone, a little bit more, it's actually moved. The galaxy spun since that. This was drawn, it's already up here now. Next.
You want to put up the lights or is it
okay? Unless people prefer it, people see better than that one. From that master plan, we've actually over here the
one
load. We overlaid actually the Crown area as designated in that original master plan, just to give people an idea of the kind of approach at that time. And you can see, it obviously has this circular movement, but it's very much a sort of ebb and flow as it goes around, especially in this area, because the residential zone, which goes from sectors 1 through to 5, this is going to be the highest density. So the Crown actually adapts as it moves around, depending on the requirements and the facilities needed. Here we go a few years later to the galaxy model, already fleshed out a little bit. It's very much a massing model. We're not necessarily, I don't think there's ever expected that these would be specific buildings, that everything white is building, but at least it's sort of built mass to landscape. You can already start to get a sense of more urban spaces in and amongst the Crown. There's a very strong water element. We have the lake around the National Idea. We have various water bodies spreading through the cultural zone and the international zone. You can't make it out very easily on this image, but on the model, there's actually also a circular water body running all the way around here, almost like a small canal. Again, we've sort of taken the liberty to try and imagine within this model what kind of area designated as Crown. And what's very interesting is we can see that it's not so clear, because the Crown itself is actually trying to temper the strong radial geometry of the outside part of the township with a slightly more radial geometry coming, axial geometry coming out from the Latin idea. So it's very much a sort of zone of intermingling different areas. We jump now to the present day, courtesy of Google. You can see the Matamandia and the Pisa de Banyan. It's roughly the same scale as what we've just been looking at. You can actually make out, from the solar picture here, you can make out the Crown Road, what's existing there now. This was taken already before the link was made here, past time. Now it runs right the way through up to here. One can actually drive a bit of in and out all the way to here. The west starting point, so that even if for the existing situation now with a lot of traffic coming up through past the Eucalyptus Grove, on the way past the solar kitchen and then turning here onto the Crown Road, it seemed like a perfect opportunity to use this present situation to explore some of these new ideas. This is the area in more detail. We got a few of the buildings, we've got the Kailash, solar kitchen, Eucalyptus, Tessie's house here, we've got the new Saia residential block, we've got the guest house, we've got a college guest house with all the trees over here. Next. It might be a little confusing, but just to give you an idea of what we're starting with, this is an overlay of a particular area, the two galaxy drawings. So this brown line is actually the outline from the original master plan. This green is the built area of the galaxy model, and the grey are the lines, of course. This would be then actually the centre line of the so-called proposed in the road. And this is, we're not taking this, any of this as gospel, but it's just the starting point to actually start exploring the design. It does actually give a sense, it's already a sense of some of the local spaces and the degree of the scale. I mentioned earlier about the different pulling together the different geometries. So first the main one are the axes of the Matrimandir. This is the main north-south axis from one of the pillars. This would be the next one. So if you actually follow these two lines towards the Matrimandir, you end up on the path walking towards it with the garden between each. Okay. This again, as I mentioned, the actual road itself, the post road itself, you can see it actually runs across the sort of point next. And these would be then the radials, things are finalized, of course, in radial works as they've been proposed recently. Next. And that's the merging of these different geometries. It's a bit confusing at the moment, but you'll see what we do with it at the moment. And it's very much the idea that we're trying to, even the radials themselves are going across and the axes are coming through here. We want to reinvigorate the crown area as a place, almost like a crucible. Sort of main artery running around Auroville, and it will actually join and combine the different energies of the different zones and allow movement not just along but across. So we had the feeling that a road could often act as a barrier between the outer part of the township and the inner part of the township. So we're trying to get away from that. We're trying to bring together these different forces. Next. Mona already mentioned the idea of psychography, psychological geography. So what we've done is we've gone and we picked out certain elements from the landscape. For instance, we have the lines of Palmyra, which are very dominant in Tamil Nadu. We've chosen some of those. We have the centre, the Banyan, the centre guest house. We've got the smaller, the Banyan, near the parking. Very beautiful clump of mature bamboo, which runs on the way through here. That's on the back road to Edmund Chapman. And then here, there's a lot of mature kayas in amongst these trees. And these are the service trees which have been planted by the forest group as a starting point for the boulevard trees on the ground itself. So the idea was to take not only existing buildings, but elements of the existing landscape and work with those as part of the design process. So continuing the theme of landscape, already the radials seen as roads at the moment by Lavinia and Aura Future. So we're keeping that idea, but we'd like to see the radials rather than being for motorised traffic, we'd like to see it for pedestrians, for cyclists, and that they actually then cross the crown to a certain degree, that they don't just stop at the crown road itself. And this also, we very much like the idea that not just buildings that represent the galaxy form, but also landscape. Represent the galaxy form. But as I just mentioned, if these lines do represent the galaxy, then they ought to represent kind of what we're standing for. So by having it as actually non-polluting traffic by pedestrians and cyclists, that's making the statement of what the galaxy represents. So motorized traffic, as and where necessary, will actually wind its way through. It will not just be a speed track for very like to drive very fast. Next. This is actually one of the parks. It's the park that runs between the cultural zone and the residential zone. But because the cultural zone actually crosses the Crown and runs in just above here, above the map around here, the park actually runs in next to it, existing in the master plan. Our proposal, however, is to say rather than make it a park, we'd actually like to see it more like a TDF forest. So that in fact we bring the green belt into the city, and we have areas where these parks are, which are actually then dedicated to wildlife. So a lot of the sort of parameters that we're looking at are to sort of set up priorities, prioritization. So for instance, in this area, the boulevard trees of this particular radio, they would then stop at the forest, and you would then just get a very narrow path for the cyclists and the pedestrians going through the TDF forest, like you have now in the Greenbelt. And then you come out on the other side in the cultural area just before the map around here. So it's kind of to suggest that that TDF forest in that area has its priority, the wildlife has a priority, and human beings kind of take a step back and the road doesn't just plow through. Next. We've then taken the idea further here, this would be a sort of lighter TDF, because sort of more classic TDF is left to its own devices. You get very much a kind of jungle feeling, so you can't just walk through it. So here we'd like to see, again, TDF species in the sense that we want to see a xeriscape city, that's a dry landscaping city, a city which doesn't require any, or require much watering. But it would be slightly more tended in these areas, so that in fact you can walk in various paths beneath the trees. What we're seeing here is very much the idea of sort of green fingers interlocking with the urban elements of the lines of force. We've termed this kind of, rather than suburban, it's kind of supra-urban. It's very interesting in the English language that we've ended up with this word suburban, because sub is below, it's actually not that great. But suburbia was an attempt to actually have the best of the city with the best of landscape, the best of the countryside. But in many cases we ended up with neither. We ended up with strip development and large amounts of roads and so forth. So what we'd like to see is an opportunity here within the galaxy to say, well, let's actually create supra urban and have fairly dense living but with a very dense landscape right next to each other. So you actually bring the landscape in and you, the people are more consolidated within the lines of force. This actually, not just the lines of force, but also around them. This actually also addresses this whole thing of the city the earth needs, because a lot of this is, in fact, last year was the first year in the history of the planet that more people were living in cities than outside cities. And that is going to continue from now on. So we actually need to come up with models, come up with ideas that help the majority of humanity actually see how they might live in an urban environment in a different way. Next. At the foot of each of the lines, of course, we have the idea, okay, well, that's actually, because people might be moving through the line of force to sort of move towards the crown. We use that opportunity to sort of create small squares, parks, at the foot of each of the lines of force. And also here, we've chosen one area, could be anywhere, but in this particular case, we chose the Kayad, to create like more like a public garden with flowering species which require a lot of water. This is to sort of suggest that if we mostly have xeriscape, it would be nice to have a few areas which are very public, which a lot of people get the benefit of, where we focus water-intensive plants and flowers. Now we start to get into the more urban aspects of the Crown Noise proposal. And what we're looking at, what you'll be seeing in the next few slides, we're not proposing buildings, but we're actually focusing on our urban spaces. Because Oroville's going to develop over quite a long period of time, and we don't necessarily know exactly which building's going to come where or to the house, we'd like to start with the idea of specifying and creating urban space. And over a period of time, the community comes to an agreement as to what these urban spaces might be and what they might look like, then over time, if any particular architect is given has a project on this place, then they know what they're designing relates not only to this actual, this radial going through here, but is actually facing onto a plaza, which will develop over time, and that actually is a great help. And really thin movement on these. You cross through and pass through these. We've included here the existing smaller banyan. So this would almost be like a small plaza just off the center guest house area. And this one then faces onto the end of the solar kitchen and links with this radial here. And this one also then links in with a flow from the minor force coming up through this square into the space next to the flow of the radial here. Then between these main plazas, there would then be sort of smaller areas. So this one takes the bamboo, which are already existing there. You know, the bamboo plaza over here, a small plaza there, and another one at the foot of the line of force here. So we start to get a hierarchy of spaces moving as you move through the crown. Just to point out, the crown itself, there are 12 of these axes. And as you move around the crown, interestingly enough, it takes almost exactly 1 hour to walk the whole crown. So it's kind of like a clock face. And it actually takes you 5 minutes to walk from here to here. So if we imagine in the future some kind of public transportation system, electric bus or whatever it might be, if we have our sort of main bus stops at each of these plazas, you only have 2.5 minute walk maximum to find yourself in the middle here to go to either of the stops. You might have noticed it's called Crown Ways and not Crown Way. One of the ideas is against breaking the idea of a road, but also creating a more dense urban environment. There's a sense of supra-urban. So we have a lot of landscape in the rest of the development, but here as you move towards the crown, you would actually start to get a sense of the feel of a much more dense urban environment. Then as you move through and out the other side, that will free up again. So it really gives you a sense as you're walking through the whole area that you really start to feel, okay, I'm coming into something different. And it provides a number of different routes. So for instance, the Crown Way, we've chosen here just to express it with this beige colour paving, whatever it might be. So that this would be the Crown Way. So you'd actually come in from any particular angle, and when you actually come onto this type of paving, you know, okay, I'm on the Crown Way. And you meander through the different spaces, you explore the different squares, and then you go out the other side. These two axes, we also would like to highlight in a different way. We have the idea of paths of light, where we find a different type of paving material, which could even have some kind of quartz or other glistening material, so that these axes to the Matramandir will be highlighted in a different way. This also gives a certain rhythm as you walk around the crown. You would cross a different type of paving and one suggestion was that, for instance, we actually keep the main four axes, which lead to the pillars, as paths that you really walk along. Another possibility is here, it might just be represented in the paving over this stretch, but we might actually leave this out. You get an access to the map around you when you see it, but you don't necessarily walk it, you just walk, maybe just walk it where it leads to the pillars, but these are all things that can be explored in the future. Okay? So, again, this would be kind of an outline of a potential building plot, which would then define some of these spaces. So anybody given that to design doesn't mean it's literally just that, but within that area, that would then, the building would be designed according to what's around it, and obviously the architect is concerned with designing any kind of courtyards or anything required within the thing of the piece of the building. Another idea for this is that we take all the residential, certainly in the crown area, if not everywhere, off the ground floor. We feel this is a very important concept. This sounds a bit radical, but since Auroville belongs to nobody in particular, our experience at the moment when we walk around in Auroville is it's very difficult to get to a lot of places. You're never quite sure. Most of the communities are fenced. It's very hard when you're in the community. Okay, you might just have a path down through the middle of the community. There's a lot of private gardens, there's lots of areas where you think, can I go here, can I go there? So we thought one idea, if we take actually most of the residential off the ground, there will always be a few exceptions, but that basically you can walk anywhere in this whole area. These would all be then public facilities, public services, offices, studios, any kind of facilities where it's not so important if someone comes and looks in through the window and sees you working at your desk. Next slide. The answer to the question then of what do people do who would like to have a garden, if you see here the grey area would then be the first floor of the garden. What we've done is we've created a number of terraced gardens on the roofs. And so any families or anybody who would like to have a garden space, this becomes a communal garden for the people just living here. There's no public access. So there's a certain privacy, security as well, there's small children playing in the garden. And so these then become the residential garden. And we also have more hard landscape roofs, like you have already here in the solar picture, where the cafe is. There can be more of these where people can actually rise up one floor off the Crown Road, and you can be looking down over the plaza below. As we keep rising up, we're coming up through the lines of course here. What you start to see here with this patterning, we'd actually like the lines of force, we kind of see almost like urban hills, where you can actually just walk from the crown, and instead of walking along the crown, maybe you actually choose to turn down here, you go through the square, you rise up through this park, and you actually just keep going up the hill of the line of force to the top. And with one idea also, one thing that's very popular, taking off a lot in other parts of the world, is urban agriculture. And from the idea of Oregon starting to become a self-sustaining development, we'd like to see a lot of the roofs of the lines of force actually being used for agriculture. It's kind of fields of ragi and kombu sailing up into the sky. Next. We keep going up in the height. Next. So the lines of force rise up away. In the residential zone, they're always lower, closer to the center, and they rise up away. In the industrial zone, it goes the other way. They rise up from the outside towards the center. Another idea that Dreamcatchers was having was, since acoustics seems to be such a major problem in Oregon, we were looking at acoustic gradients. Obviously, wishing it to be very quiet near the center at Matramandia, it would obviously get louder with more and more people in movement towards the crowd, and then quieter again towards the outside. But we're also imagining that going up into the sky. We're trying to sort of suggest that maybe in the crown area on the ground, where most of the activity is, it's obviously noisier. And the higher one goes up the line, of course, maybe we could imagine a quieter and quieter zone. We sort of tongue-in-cheek call this from youth to yogis. The idea is that sort of the families and younger people live on the first and second floors, and as you get higher up, you kind of get smaller and smaller. To manage apartments, little balconies, whatever. One thing that's very important to point out is we have as many youthful yogis as yogic youth, so there's no ghettoization of all the youth at the bottom and everybody else at the top or whatever. Next. What you see, we've moved into the water, our approach to water now. Very subtle, these just appear. And what we're suggesting here is that these actually would be the, for instance, like reed bed systems, water treatment plants, for the area around, for the line of force, plus surrounding buildings. We've chosen to put them in the line of the galaxy. Again, like that, what we do with our water also expresses our value system as a community. So we've actually put them in the line of the galaxy. It's also very interesting, we've chosen to put them on the inside of the curve of the line of force. What this does, it pulls the tree line a little bit further away from the building. This means that anybody walking along in this area gets to see much more of the line of force as it moves away into the distance. So it gives people walking on the ground glimpses and a sense of the larger galaxy as they walk through the crownway. It also pulls the tree line back and allows much more of the wind to move along and through the building where the trees might otherwise block its light. We picked up again on the idea from the galaxy model, where there was kind of like an expression of a canal. Rather than have the road, there was quite some interest from various people to still express this perfect circle in some form or another. So what we've done is we said, well, okay, let's make that circle into a water body. But since we don't have that much water, and since a lot of it comes this actually fills up with water, kind of like a hard landscape, sculpted channel. We have a 10-meter drop in from one side of the crown to the other. It's from one point on this side, it's 10 meters lower in Darkali on the other side. So we have quite a significant gradient to deal with over that 4.4 kilometers. So this water channel would actually then step down as it goes around the crown, and the water would be collected. Any rainwater landing in this area would be channeled into this channel. Next. And then at various points along it, we would actually then create kind of step tanks or water tanks to actually collect this rainwater in sort of specific areas where, you know, beautiful place to sit or to walk past or whatever. What you also notice is here, just as a graphic representation, we've chosen sort of circular ones here, we've got more long ones in the direction of the radial, you know, square ones. This is an attempt to sort of give a different expression to each of the sectors as you walk around the crown relating to the garden at the centre. So each one would have a different geometry. So as you walk along the crown, not only as you cross this line, but you would also start to see a different geometry of these water catchments to get a sense of that part of the crown that you're experiencing at that moment. Next. So as this water is collected and as it goes into these, if there's still an excess of water, that can be just channeled off to percolation pits in the TDEF, like TDEF areas, between the lines of force where it then percolates back down into the aquifer. And it's we have to actually study this. How long we keep the water in those water bodies, do we leave it till it evaporates, do we use it for the plants, do we open up and down and let it out, earlier. This all has to be seen over time. But just the basic concept that we actually utilize the water catchment to create a beautiful environment within the crown area. Next. So in the meantime, this is the building we have at the moment. We had done this presentation already last year to Lavinia to kind of show if the secretary is pushing to have the 64 lakhs spent on the crown. We sort of proposing this as one approach where you could actually pave this area and you leave the gaps for future development. One idea would be then that these gaps, these plots, could be planted with casuarina, work tree, something like that, so that over a very short period of time, anybody walking through this area, even if there are no buildings here yet, you will start to get a sense of this urban grid. And then if somebody comes to build in this area, you simply take the casuarina down, and you use it for scaffolding for the building, and then the building comes up here. So over a period of time, buildings will appear in here and flesh out the experience of the crown in that area. Next. This is going back to the original one, the idea that, as we had from the green space, how can we bring the idea of the green belt into the city? If we can green the galaxy, not in the sense of hiding it, but in the sense of really unifying this urban and sort of dense urban and dense landscape, then we feel that's a possible transformation into the 21st century. We're very much looking at the idea of turning the concept of an eco city or an eco town, which is being built many places all over the world at the moment. We want to integrate that, and we want to try and transcend that and actually create parameters and ideas that would help to develop a yogic city. We're looking for parameters which will actually help Auroville make that leap.